And so Zach will not be attending. Mm-hmm. If they're a volunteer to chair the meeting.
Tom, I think you're doing a great job.
Okay, I'll chair the meeting. Okay.
Do we need a motion to appoint Tom as the chair? Probably just be.
I will be happy to appoint Tom as a chair. He knows what's going on anyway, so that's the best.
Perfect.
Okay, thank you. So we're set?
You bet.
Randy, you're okay?
Yes.
Okay. Could we have a motion to adopt the agenda for today's meeting?
I'll so move to adopt the agenda for this meeting.
Thank you.
I guess I just expected it. We're a little short of people.
Thank you. Could we have a motion to, could we adopt the minutes from our last meeting, which you have a copy of?
Yeah.
Seconder?
They're all second up.
Okay. Away we go.
Yay.
So, business arising for the minutes. You are here now. I've been corresponding with Lynette at his park for some time. And what it was, the You Are Here map, this has been going on for a couple of years. It's been approved by council to replace the signage, but they've gotten quite kind of black with algae and some mold. The moisture gets up underneath the plexiglass plate and whatnot. Anyway, there was an issue in July. Coombe Signs was going on vacation. It kind of threw things off to get those signs made up, but it has been approved by council, and so that will be done, and I'll check back with Lynette again just to see where that is at. Okay, so that's happening. One thing was the town branding. There was the issue of removing the tiki from the town brand, and the branding issue has been going on for a couple of years now, I think. And so the motion from council was to go ahead and get the signs made up and get her done, not wait for the branding. Is that right, Luke?
That's correct.
Okay. The Hemsworth Trail and tree planting. With that, the hardwood trees were planted along Hemsworth. Water bags have been installed. They'll likely need some stakes for winter snow. That seems to be the prediction for a cold, snowy winter. What's that?
I said, yay, it's about time. We need one.
Yeah, yay. So just what happened over there is the dogwood, the big leaf maple, and the black hawthorn did really well. The Pacific crab apple and the Douglas maple have basically died. So two of those species, for whatever reason, just didn't take over there. But there were 45 trees planted, so there is going to be probably at least 30 grow on and survive. So that's pretty good success.
Yes, Tom, a question about those maples. I had a friend asking me about all our maples that appear to be dying because they have the white on them. And there was an article in the Times Colonist that said that it's simply because of weather conditions and it's actually a downy mildew. So even if the trees look dead, they're probably not dead. So do you think that could apply to some of those maples we have along there? Like,
no,
maybe they're not dead.
No, they're dead. There isn't a leaf on them.
Okay, that's pretty convincing, isn't it?
So, photosynthesis, in order to survive, no leaves, no photosynthesis. And they died like right off the bat. It looked like when they went in the ground that they were going to make a go of it, and they did pop leaves, and then the leaves just shriveled up and disappears. And so they're kind of just sort of some sticks sticking out of the ground. But hey, three species did make it. And so that's successful. The one thing I wanted to ask about is, okay, so we propose to do a gravel walking trail along the edge of Hemsworth. Arnold Schwab, head of public works, I think Arnold's looking for some grant money to have fiber optic cable laid first before the gravel trail goes down. And I get a lot of questions. Like when I'm over there walking, people are asking like what's going on and what's happening with this trail and this kind of stuff. There's grass growing there. People get concerned about the taller grass and the fire hazards. It's in the queue to cut the grass next time around. So that's going to happen. The question is, do we really need that trail along Hemsworth? Or is it an okay idea just to leave it as a dirt path, just kind of meandering through these trees that are becoming established? I just wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about that. What do you think?
Well, there's a couple of spots there, Tom, that are wet, where the trail goes through. And so during the winter and spring months, it's pretty mucky. Most of the trail is high and dry, though.
Absolutely right. There's an area kind of between Elkwa and Namqua of sedges and some reed grass and stuff, and it gets really wet and mucky. So if we did the gravel trail, it would be better. It'd be up on high ground, and it would be better. One of the ideas with the gravel trail right next to Hemsworth was to perhaps slow the traffic down. You know, it's a lane and a half, and people do speed. It's posted at 30 kilometers. And the people that live along there, they're kind of constantly kind of going on about the speed on that road. So that was kind of the idea, is move the trail right next to Hemsworth, have people walking on it safely because it's right off the road, but maybe that might be an incentive for people to slow down. That was kind of the idea.
Well, it would also be an opportunity to prevent accidents. You know, two-legged speed bumps is what I'm thinking of. But we haven't had any accidents along there, but I can sure see how it would happen with the amount of foot traffic on Hemsworth itself.
And there's absolutely no enforcement of speed limits. None. I've never seen a police officer along the street there ever.
Well, the town did monitor. They put a box on the speed limit sign that's kind of at the base of Dogwood. They did monitor speed there for quite some time. If the trail was there, people would have an incentive to walk on the gravel trail as opposed to walking on Hemsworth Road, kind of, I would think. And we get the traffic off the road surface and get them onto the trail. Like, why would you walk on the road if you had a really nice gravel trail sitting right there?
That's right,
yeah. So it might be safer.
Yeah. So, Tom, is the holdup right now the fiber optics cable funding? Is that the holdup?
Is that where it's at, Luke?
Hey, Tom. Honestly, I don't know. It sounds like you may have had a more recent conversation with Arnold about this specific project than I have, so I don't know. I'd have to follow up. So the one thing I'd just comment on in terms of it, whether or not the trail is necessary, I would say it is, you know, because people that aren't physically able to walk down and kind of do the dirt path meandering through the trees, they will be walking on the road, and I do think that and, you know, as it becomes busier and there's more people in that category, I think we're going to need to safely accommodate them in some way. So I, for one, would definitely say let's do the gravel path. Let's do it right.
I think aesthetically it would look really good. Not that, you know, that's necessarily a criterion, but I think it would look pretty good along Hemsworth there. I think an asset to the area. And the idea with the hardwood trees is once they really get growing, we're going to have a lot of lateral branches. And so that was kind of the idea, is to move the trail off the dirt and away from the new trees and get them up, you know, next to the road. Because otherwise, you know, we'll have to prune them up, you know, fairly high to allow people to walk through this corridor. So, okay, so the consensus seems to be to, you know, stick with the new gravel trail idea that stands with.
Sounds good.
I do like the idea of a separated walkway. I think it's safer for people. My only thing, and I also am a fan of trails being accessible, and I don't know how accessible gravel is to some people, but I don't know what the ideal surface.
Well, see, if you go with asphalt, that's bicycles and that's speed.
Yeah.
And there's an issue I want to talk to you guys about the bicycles, you know, in the forest. And but yeah, asphalt's about speed.
Mm-hmm.
We don't necessarily want to create a new trail for bikes. It's about foot traffic. And I think the idea is, you know, is to go with, you know, larger kind of like small boulderish, you know, as the underlayer to let the water drain through freely. And then with a cap, and then, you know, geotextile material and stuff, but then a cap of, you know, smaller granular gravel that once it's compacted, it'll probably become a pretty solid surface, actually.
Yeah.
Almost like a road. And I'll bet you people, you know, with the baby carriages and that kind of stuff, because there's a lot of that going on, would have no issue, you know, with that gravel once it's packed down.
Right.
Yeah, that's the key, because loose gravel is pretty bad on narrow wheels. I used to find that when I worked for the ambulance. We dig ourselves into the groove, you know.
Yeah.
But this would be good then. Good then.
A hard packed surface of, yeah, that sounds good. Sorry.
With regard to bicycles, I'm not sure whether it's Luke or I who do more bicycling. I just finished putting over 8,000 kilometers on an e-bike over 2.5 years or so. But so I do a lot of riding around the neighborhood in Ellsberg here, and 25 kilometer an hour speed limit is just fine on the road for bicycling, and also for keeping vehicles and bicycles separate. That would work in through there. I've never had an issue with vehicle traffic and bicycling on Hemsworth.
Okay. I wanted to talk a little bit about e-bikes in the forest, maybe under new business, because I've had a couple of emails on that one. So maybe we'll get back to the e-bike thing in the forest. Is that good?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds good.
Okay, so I will check with Arnold and find out what's up with the fiber optic funding, because that's what Arnold had indicated kind of a few months ago. And it makes sense, like there's some grant funding out there. Hey, you know, good on the towns for going after that grant funding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Next up, verbal reports on the management plan. Just as a kind of a backgrounder, there was two kind of main issues. The management plan itself, I'd written in 2008 very quickly, and it was, you know, when I reread it, I guess last year, I could see that there were some, I don't want to call them mistakes, but, you know, could have been better wording and, you know, different things like that. So made a number of adjustments to the management plan. which were adopted. And then the other one was the issue of the kind of mistaken cutting of wildlife trees / danger trees. And then the other one was the 30-meter kind of buffer behind the residences on Palm Drive, and the need to go in and cut the smaller dead trees within that 30-meter buffer. And so there were two things to kind of attach to the management plan itself, as well as kind of some better wording for the management plan itself. And so that was proposed quite a long time ago. And Luke, you and I have talked about it kind of a while ago. Where is that at? It's been quite a while.
Sure. Yeah, the last time we talked, it's just a matter of updating the covenant, you know, getting a lawyer to work with us to actually have the wording of the covenant updated to reflect the management plan. So it will be done. I just think it hasn't come up to the top of the list yet, but it will.
Any kind of an idea on timeline?
Because
this has been a
while. It's been a while. I know. So I'll talk about it next management meeting to get some clarity. I do think there's an opportunity to do it this fall because it, you know, some of the I think there will be an opportunity. There's been a big push in the last say 4 or 5 months on some other projects, but that's going to be drawing to a close. So well, leave that with me. I mean, I think the message is we need to get around to it, and I think that's, I've heard that loud and clear.
Okay, and like one thing is the issue, like we had 22 volunteers come out from the society last January, and then it was over to the town for the larger stems that require chainsaw work, and we then had gotten into the breeding bird season of February to September. So one of the reasons I'm raising it now is we're going to be outside of the breeding bird season, you know, pretty soon, like the end of September, and then it'll be over to Lynette to, you know, get the subcontract crew in there. And the language that's being proposed is that the town and the subcontractor crew discuss and meet in person in the forest to talk about specifically which trees are to come down, because unfortunately there's been quite a few mistakes made in the past. So that was the whole idea of getting this in writing. And so that's coming up. The window to actually do that work is coming up this fall as well. That's why I'm kind of pushing on this a little bit. Good, Luke?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think if there's work to be done, the fact that the covenant hasn't officially been updated, I don't think that would prevent, you know, work that is time sensitive. So to me, there's two parallel issues, Tom. So if there's work that absolutely needs to be done because of the season and because of the urgency of these issues, then by all means, let's get them done. The covenant itself, a covenant only has effect in terms of the parties and their willingness to enforce it. So in other words, if all the parties have agreed to something, then it's okay, right? So we will absolutely work with you. And anything that's time sensitive, then, you know, let's get it done.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Because the Land Conservancy, they were in complete agreement with all this stuff.
That's correct. So all three parties agree, you know, there's no other party that would raise issue with the covenant. So it's okay.
Okay. All right. I'll put a reminder out to Lynette at some point. She knows about this, and we'll get it on. Okay, so the Old Grove Douglas First Avenue Museum, it's a thing of beauty. The town did an amazing job of mounting that 500-year-old slab over the museum. And if any of you haven't been over to the museum lately, it's a terrific location. You walk through the gate and you're looking down kind of the corner and bingo, there's this 500-year-old Douglas fir slab right at the end of that. And I popped over, I guess it was last week, we'd written a little verbiage about, tree originated 1515, logged in 1915, like a little bit of that and a little bit of fire history information, and came from the Heritage Forest, provided by the Brown Property Preservation Society. So the museum has that request in for that sign, and it will be installed in short order. Talking to, I think it's Lorraine is the new person over there, and she was all over it. So, and again, if you haven't been over to the museum lately, and the old power station's all done now too. Like it was very impressive, the museum over there. So that's done. Interpretive signage, yes, the interpretive signage has gone in. And again, if anybody hasn't gone for a walk through the forest lately, please have a look at the new signage. I've been getting some really positive feedback on the stories. So that's good. And thank you, Tom, for doing the install on that. So that's done. The new metal bench was installed on the old concrete slab next to the little studio suite that was at the barn, and been getting positive comments on that. And I noticed that that particular bench, it's being used just regularly. So anyway, that it turns out that was a really good location to put that bench up there. So that's them. Forest walk for the Land Conservancy. Yes, I did that. Man, you came out with us on that one.
Yeah, I was there for the first hour or so, I think.
Yeah, and anyway, that went very well. And spent a couple of hours in there. I'm just looking on my cheat sheet here for the name of the woman who came out.
Right? Laura?
Amichel is her last name. Anyway, she was great. And she was very impressed with the signage and just the whole story of the fundraising and all this kind of stuff. And so anyway, she was very happy to come out. And Karen,
here.
Yeah. And by the way, she's managing 260 covenants around the province of British Columbia. So she's a busy woman. But anyway, we had a really good walk and a really good tour, and she was very supportive of everything that's going on in the forest there. So that was done. Update on forest management issues. Other than the January work party with the society folks, we haven't had any work parties or that kind of stuff. I water the trees about every 2 weeks in the grassy meadow area. Yes, we didn't get into the heat dome, of course, but it has been very dry, and so anyway, it's sort of fun. Like I enjoy doing it. It's not like it's a big chore or something like that, and people often chat with me over there. We have, it's an opportunity to have a discussion about the forest and this kind of stuff. So that's a good thing.
I have a question about that, Derek, that thing. Have we had a fire? Have we had a fire in there somewhere recently in the last 2 weeks? Because I went to a little thing with some of my neighbors, and they were all talking about it. That there had... Sorry?
False alarm.
Where did all the smoke come from then?
Well, I don't know, but it didn't come from the forest.
And, oh, okay, good.
Yeah, because I live like one door up off Hemsworth.
Oh, yeah, you'd notice.
If there's any fire trucks around, I go over right away. Hey, what's going on? And apparently somebody had called in from quite close by. I thought I could smell something too. And, but there was nothing in the forest. And there were two trucks on Hemsworth kind of at the gate. And the guys were telling me that, oh, yeah, there's more trucks over on the East Crescent and St. Andrews and side. And so there was nothing, nothing going. It's kind of interesting. That's a good point. And Luke and I talked about this a little bit recently. And boy, I'll tell you, there's like five fire trucks within 20 minutes, you know, I'm sure, of a phone call going in. And boy, that forest-urban interface is so well covered. I mean, there's, because I guess people talk about fire hazard and the grass in the meadow area, like where the kiosk is, and in the grass along Hemsworth. People get worried about the grass and everything, but, you know, boy, oh boy, the response time, because we've got so many fire departments around us here, we are so well served. And again, it's people, well, that was a resident that called, but people walking in the forest, pretty well everybody's got a cell phone anymore. And we're extremely fortunate in that we've got so many different fire departments, you know, kind of all around us here. But yeah, I thought I smelled something that day too, Angie, like when the trucks were there. I thought, well, wait a sec, yeah, I can smell something. I don't know, it wasn't in the forest, so it must have been somebody burning in their backyard.
Or can't stick stupid. Yeah. No, my neighbors had said that there was, the smoke was quite strong, and they walked down to Hemsworth to take a look, and there was a lot of smoke, but it sounded quite short-lived. So I don't know. Maybe it was somebody doing something, or, I don't know, cleaning out their chimney or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But the guys indicated they were on the radio with the other crews, of course, and they couldn't see anything in the forest at all.
Good.
So, yeah, so we got through, well, we're not quite through the fire season yet, but all systems go on no fires this year.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any forest management, forest maintenance kind of issues or anything to bring up?
Are we having problems with the hemlock trees in that area? And the reason I'm asking is I've just had 8 trees taken down at my place, and they're all dead hemlocks.
Yep. So, yeah, we definitely are. Well, there's a really good example right at the Hemsworth Gate.
Saw that, yep. That's right. Not a hemlock, though, is it?
Yeah.
It is? Okay.
And it's, like, it's about 8 inches or something at the base. But so what's happening with the hemlock now is, like what happens with the cedar, is on those droughty, dry roadside edges where there's not a lot of moisture, they dry out excessively anyway. That's where the hemlock are getting into trouble. And so, yeah, it was kind of our view about 15 years ago, and then it was cedar about 4 years ago, and now the hemlock are having issues. Even the odd Douglas fir, like driving around and stuff, you'll see the odd Douglas fir. It's just bright red, and it's on a roadside edge. It's on a really a dry spot. I wrote a letter to the editor. This is a number of years ago, about people forgetting to water their cedar hedges. Like when you drive around, you'll see people's cedar hedges along the driveway or something, and you know, two or three or four are just bright red. Well, cedar loves water, and don't forget to water the cedar hedges.
You'd think that nobody would need a prompt for that because they paid to have that hedge installed. You know, like they pay good money to have it all nice looking and then don't water it and just let it dry. Doesn't make sense.
Well, it's the thinking of, you know, the trees can look after themselves. You know, we put it in the ground and, you know.
It's on its own, yeah.
Yeah. But especially cedar, they like their feet wet. So, but fortunately, the cedar in the forest, like the large cedar, I don't see any issues with them at all. Let's see, I guess that's new business. We'll get to some forest maintenance stuff in the new business as well. Anything else under that, forest maintenance? Okay, new business. Housekeeping. Okay, and there's the fire ladder issue within 30 meters of the Palm Drive residence. I'll talk to Lynette about that. We'll get that going. The list of preferred tree contractors, that was something that was put over to me. And the three that I've been kind of bumping into are Branching Out, Tree Co., and Viking. And the idea there was that whoever we get, like whatever subcontractor comes in, the town has a rule about 6 inches. They don't want their crews to use the chainsaws on trees over 6 inches in diameter. So that's why then it gets subcontracted to a company. And so the idea with having, let's say, a few contractors being proposed is that, let's say I was to go out and talk with Branching Out, which actually I did already last August. We have a great conversation about what needs to happen and why and all that kind of stuff. And then they got it. Like they understand they want to do it. They want to do a good job. But it's not like we've got a brand new tree contractor showing up every time and they, you know, don't know, you know, what it is that's expected. And what it is the wildlife trees. It's the pileated woodpecker trees. There was a great horned owl snag that was cut erroneously, mistakenly, over on the St. Andrews side years ago. And there's been a couple of pileated woodpecker wildlife trees that were mistakenly cut. But that's where I think we need to get something in writing and spend a little time with the contractors because they want to do a good job. And whenever I talk to these guys, they're all about it. They want to do it. So that was the idea with the list of preferred contractors, to have a few companies that are in the know as far as what's expected, and then we'll stop having these wildlife trees mistakenly cut.
I think the key is communication within those organizations, too, because I have had issues with tree cutters here and ended up with a whole other stuff bucked up to the wrong length. So now that you know, they come in with a set of orders and read them over to me before they even start, just to make sure it's right. And I think we have to do that with the other contractors as well, you know. Just have them, like you say, have a list of requirements and then make sure that's communicated to all the guys doing the cutting, because sometimes the guys doing the cutting aren't the ones in the know.
So what happens is, you know, from companies from the silvicultural industry, somebody will come out, get on a job, get all the conversation from the client in his or her head, and then the day of the job, that guy is off in Courtney or in Nanaimo, and it's the crew that's there, and they're not in the home.
Yeah.
And so I think that having this in writing, this document, having a meeting on site, and really emphasizing what it is that's supposed to take place here, and the town arborist, you know, on site.
Yeah.
I think we should have it covered, but you're absolutely right. It's communication.
Yeah.
Always.
So, Tom, I'm just looking back at my notes, and the Heritage Forest Commission, on the 3rd of February this year, this matter was dealt with at that point. So the note here says an addendum to motion on contracts. This is my last note. Add consultation by contractor with Brown's Property Preservation Society prior to commencement of work. So where is that at? Just following on, the motion was related to that.
Okay, so what happened was I met with Branching Out. I think it was January, and anyway, had a great conversation. The guy understood. Oh, and the town arborist as well. And so the contractor totally understood what was expected. We cut as society volunteers the small diameter stuff, and then the contractor was supposed to do the bigger diameter stuff. Well, so we had the conversation. The quote went in. I thought it was a really good number. I was surprised it was so low, actually. And that was, I thought, a really good number. And then it kind of didn't happen. And then we got into the breeding birds season. And so that's why that work didn't happen, is it got shut down because now we were into, I think it was even the end of February or something, and Arnold thought, and rightly so, let's hold off on that work until the end of September when we're out of the breeding bird season. Mm-hmm. So that's what happened.
Right. I guess what I'm referring to is the process of contracting, the requirement within the contract that the contractor would engage Brown's Property Preservation Society.
Okay.
That was what I'm referring to.
Okay. Yeah, well, that would be something, Luke, for maybe Wynette or Arnold to make sure something goes into their contract. Like we did do that meeting last time, but now, you know, the clock's kind of run out. Like their bid probably won't be valid anymore. And so I don't know how you deal with that, Luke.
Yeah, so after a certain period of time, obviously the bid needs to be refreshed.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'd like to talk with Lynette about the process, because it certainly makes sense for them to discuss with the Brown Property Preservation Society. But the town also needs to be a part of that meeting, you know, to make sure that a contractor isn't given different directions by different, you know, parties, for example. So really, I think it's about having a good pre-meeting with the people actually doing the work on the site, right? A pre-construction meeting for utilities and the roadway. It always happens. It always needs to happen. And, you know, bringing the Brown Property Preservation Society in as well, it does make sense.
Yeah, and so that would be the arborist, I would assume, would be the rep for the town.
Typically, not always, and there would be some cases where it would be, you know, say, Arnold himself, you know, if the arborists weren't available or something like that. But I'd say almost all the time it's one of the two town arborists.
Yeah.
Right. So when a work order goes out, then I'm wondering if there could be a consistent common language statements within the work order that setting out the preservation of wildlife trees, you know, the assets of value that shouldn't be cut down, and then a requirement to consult with Grounds Property Preservation Society before work begins.
That's you, Luke.
Yeah, well, I think that was part of the idea, though, of identifying the preferred contractors list, was because if they know all those things, then they're on the list. If they forget those things, then they're off the list. So I think maintaining a relationship with contractors that we can rely on to consistently carry out work in that way, I think that's the best approach overall. But having it written down never hurts. So I'd like to just have a quick discussion with Lynette and Arnold about exactly how that's done, rather than, assuming things at this point.
Yeah, like it's probably a phone call. Like they're probably, like in reality, it's not kind of a request for proposal, you know, goes out to the tree removal guys. It's a phone call. Hey, come on over. We'll meet you at 2:00. We'll talk about it. In reality, it's probably it. But if there was, that was the idea with the tree prescriptions, and to be able to hand somebody a piece of paper and go, here, like this is what you're expected to comply with. Let's talk about that. You know what I mean?
That makes sense. We should have always had that.
Well, one wouldn't assume that people would be cutting the wrong trees.
That's true. You're right there. That's it, stupid.
Well, you know, it's, again, it's a communication thing. And whenever I've, you know, caught up with the companies, they are all about it. Like, they are just all ears, and they really like that stuff about being careful around wildlife trees. And they tell me, like, oh, my God, Tom, this is great. We want to do this. This is what we want to do. And, yeah, this is great. This is great. So, anyway, it's just a matter of communication. It's something in writing. And, but we do need to stop cutting the wildlife trees in the heritage forest. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
I can just jump in. I do recall, to Cormac's point, that there was a motion that went to council, and I'm sure it was adopted by council, about the whole, having people on site before the work's done. So it's just really about taking it to the next step and make sure that happens. Right?
Right.
Yeah,
because we've got a project coming up this fall, so this will be the test case.
Right, good.
Yeah, just tell them sweetly, you mess up, you're gone.
Yeah, that's about it. The unfortunate thing is if you mess up, there's another key attribute of the forest that's gone, and so we just, and of course we know that, but the forest is a wildlife sanctuary. The idea is to maintain the ecological integrity of that forest for as long as we possibly can, and we need to stop chipping away at it.
Yeah.
So we'll get there.
Like I say, I just recall there was a motion to the effect, and it had to do with a list of preferred contractors kind of a standing order, if you like, with regard to work orders to commission the work. that there is something written there for the group. And I'm referring back to my notes again. One of the issues was that a supervisor with the contracted company, isn't necessarily on site. It's just the workers who are there. So there's a supervisory deficit with respect to how these errors occur.
Exactly. So we'll get that figured out, Luke.
Absolutely makes sense. I just made a note in my to-do list to discuss the next management meeting.
Okay. So, picnic table. So the idea with a picnic table is that where the new bench went in the near the kiosk in the grassy open area, it gets used a lot. And so what's been happening is it's kind of the young mothers with the little kids are using the forest a lot, and they will kind of sit down in the grass, in the tall grass and stuff. And you see that a lot. And so anyway, we're thinking about maybe one picnic table to go in, kind of near the kiosk, near where the barn used to be. Somewhere in there, we've got the wheelchair accessibility available, you know, coming in from Chester. The people from the Berwick or the Gardens or wherever could use that table. The young families could use that table. And, of course, there is some cost involved. But anyway, that was kind of an idea. I was thinking about it recently that would be an excellent location to put a picnic table. There's a garbage can right there. And it's quite kind of central coming in from any of the access points. I think it would get used a lot. What do you guys think?
I think you already touched on my biggest concern, and that would be litter. And if you've got garbage picked up from there, it's good. You know, I don't know if any food litter would be a bear attractant, because we do have them chugging through here once in a while. But mostly it's a good thing, I think. It'd be wonderful for the families.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would be good. But there is, an additional cost to the town, Luke. I'm not sure what if there would be an issue there of garbage collection. At that site.
So, just for clarity, are you discussing having the town put in a picnic table, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
So, if that's the case, then yeah, there's a cost associated. So, if the community recommends it, make a recommendation to council, if council endorses it, then it'll happen. But, you know, so when the recommendation goes to council, then our operations staff would prepare the accompanying kind of background about how much it costs to installed, maintained, et cetera.
Okay. And just to reiterate, too, like there's already a garbage can there to this particular location, so it wouldn't be like an extra garbage pickup or, you know, this kind of stuff. The guy goes in Sunday morning and empties the can. So that's covered. Okay, I'd like to make a motion. Can I? That the town install a picnic table in the location of the former stable/barn. How's that?
And I'll second the motion.
Yeah. Okay. Good, Randy?
Yeah.
Okay. It would get used a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nice sunny, like it's a nice viewscape there. It's nice and sunny. It's a beautiful location. Okay.
Question, does the town have a stockpile in any way of tables that have been moved from other locations? And the reason I'm asking is that we managed to get a picnic table or two at Crystalton Park in Qualicum Woods, because we've got a nice little park there for the kids with playground equipment now and everything. And I'm pretty sure that the picnic tables were scared up from other locations. So I just wondered if there is something like that. Like, is there a cheap way to do this?
Well, there could be, and that's something we have to look into. So if you want a picnic table, then, you know, the motion goes to council, and operations may say, we have one, we can move from here, or they may say it's a new order. So,
okay.
Yeah, I think that we can work out the details later.
Cool, thank you.
Okay, so under new business, just kind of skipping ahead a bit here. Couple of things like new business. Okay, we touched on the e-bikes. I've had a couple of complaints recently, and I suggested to wait until the kids are back to school. I think you're going to see less bikes through the forest. The bicycle issue has come up over the years in the forest. The Heritage Forest is on the kind of approved or recognized bicycle trail map that's available through the town. One thing I'm finding with the e-bikes is that they move pretty fast. And I've had a couple of encounters of my own, and I know, like, reading the letters to the editor of the CQB News, like the issue of belts, you know, if people would have a bell on the bike and then you know they're coming up. I don't know, the e-bikes have gotten very popular. And like, okay, so we've got the Forest Access Road that runs from Chester, of course, through to the Crown Mansion, and then it's Chip Trail out to the East Crescent Gate. That's kind of the route that most of the cyclists are using. Some of them will shoot out toward Tamsworth, but I think most of it is along that gravel fire access road. And they're moving pretty fast because that fire access road is heavily compacted gravel. It's been there for probably 50 years. And is there an idea, like, okay, so we're going to have more e-bikes. Like, this whole thing has really caught on, and of course it's a retirement community and people like to cycle. What if there was a thing of walk your bike to the forest? Yes, it's on the map for the town for an improved bicycle access. It's okay to use your bike there, but could you walk it through the Heritage Forest? Because after all, it is a wildlife sanctuary.
Well, a couple of thoughts from a bicyclist is that the old fire access trail is quite wide and it's gravel, and I don't see really an issue there with cycling, and there's plenty of room for walking and cycling. But when you get into the narrow trails in the forest, I think that's where maybe it would be a good idea to have a sign, no riding, but walking bicycle on the narrow trails. That's where people will run into issues, I would think.
If you have bicycles going too quickly, are they using it as a shortcut? Like, is it? They're not. Obviously, they're not taking the time to look at nature. They're going from point A to point B. So I'm wondering if they would even look at those signs. You know, it's a good idea, but I just don't know how you would get them to do it.
It's a shortcut.
Yeah. So they want to go quickly because they're saving time.
Well, so, okay. So, Cormac, you're not going to like this. But my observation of the e-bikers is, and you mentioned it earlier, about how many kilometers you put on your bike.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing about e-bikes, is how far you're going, because you're riding less, you're able to go faster, go farther. And I hear it all the time about how many kilometers we went to the other e-bike.
Yeah.
So it's a shortcut, and if it's about putting distance on, why not go around the forest?
Well, yeah. So I don't really think that's the issue. The issue is avoiding collisions and frightening people who are walking in and enjoying the forest. Okay. So yep. That's the reason I looked at it from another perspective, that people wanted to access off Chester, take the fire road into the grassy area. There really isn't an issue along that stretch, as far as I'm concerned, with collision potential, because the road is quite wide. But with the trails in the forest, I would think that's where you would want people to dismount and walk their bicycles. And so those areas, I can see, people want to go for a nice quiet walk in the forest on a narrow trail. The last thing you want to do is encounter a bicycle in a narrow pathway. So that's my thought on it. And with respect to people using the kind of a shortcut, if there was an area on narrow trails where they were required to dismount, it's no longer a shortcut for them.
Yeah. I think a sign is the beginning. A sign is a beginning, isn't it? Like, put a sign up, see how it goes.
Mm-hmm. Who's going to record that sign?
Other people, like the walkers, maybe. I don't know. It's the same as trying to deal with the people that have their dogs off leash. You know, the same old issue, getting people to pay attention and do what they're supposed to.
You know, it's amazing how rude people will be and are when local residents remind those who are circumventing the rules. It's amazing what's sent back to them. And just a reality check. Two things, more signs. We'll get pushed back about the sign. And then who's going to enforce it? It's not a bylaw. And it is tricky. I do hear people, they will tell me what other people said to them when they were told to put their dog on a leash, for instance.
So my question would be, Tom, how big an issue is it? Is this an issue for the future? Is this something that you're hearing about regularly? Is it just an occasional complaint? How big is the problem?
Well, it's the start of a problem. And I don't think it's a big problem yet. And my response to a couple of folks that have brought it up to me is, well, wait until September when the kids are back to school. But it's really not so much kids riding e-bikes, it's the oldsters.
The older ones.
Yeah. So maybe we can just kind of wait and see, you know, what transpires here. Like our next meeting's in February. So rather than, you know, rush out and put signs up, you know, right away. But I just thought it was worth having a chat, because it's kind of come up lately, and I think it's the e-bike thing, because they are great and they're very popular, especially with retired folks, and we're likely going to see more bikes being used in the forest.
Well, you know, there's also a special type of bicycle here. It's not necessarily just e-bikes. To ride in the forest, you would require a wide tire bicycle of some sort, as opposed to a road bike with, you know, a half-inch wide tire. So it's not necessarily just e-bikes. It would be mountain bikes and whatnot. So that's why I'm asking the question how large a problem it really is at this point.
It's not a huge problem, but I have talked to a few folks that were excited.
Mm-hmm.
It was important to them. So I thought, you know, it was probably worth having a chat, but so maybe we park this for now and think about it maybe at our next meeting in February, if it continues to be an issue or becomes more of an issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Maybe we could use the months in between just to think about what maybe some of the options might be, right? You know, what are those options? What might it look like? Maybe yeah. Staff have some ideas or what we do in other places or, you know, those kinds of ideas.
Mm-hmm. I just think of all the walking and bicycle trails. This town is wonderful that way. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically a shared pathway. And I don't know how often there are actual collisions or issues on those shared pathways in town. Have you heard any complaints from people?
Well, I think that when we first put in the shared walkway along the beach front, there have been a few issues of conflict along there.
Yeah. But not on Dollymont, for example, or the new one along Hoy Lake Road. Do you see anything there?
I don't get a lot of complaints about that.
Yeah.
But as I think Tom says, it could be the start of a problem in that these the e-bikes and it's becoming more and more popular. So if we have a higher volume, then that could create more issues going forward.
Well, certainly it's very popular and it's a great way to stay in shape. So Pagosa, their cycling group has got about 200 members.
Wow.
So it's 55 and older, it's all gray hairs.
It's quite an education to go out early on a day, even like a Sunday early, and drive around Qualicum and see the number of people walking, jogging, or riding. It's mm-hmm. a lot. People are very active here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a good thing. Yeah.
But the Heritage Forest is a wildlife sanctuary, and that our covenant has enshrined for the quiet enjoyment of nature. That's the driving force in the Heritage Forest. It's not necessarily a place to ride bicycles quickly and that kind of stuff. So let's visit it again in February.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The St. Andrews Road fire hazard reduction. The residents over on St. Andrews are concerned. I brought it up in the commission over the years that if there was ever an interface, that urban forest interface that has a potential for a cigarette butt out the window, that edge faces west. It's the driest face, forest edge in the forest. So the residents contacted me recently. They've been cutting the grass over there. They've been using the whippersnapper and this kind of stuff. There's not a lot of grass over there. Like, it's not a very wide edge. And then beyond the grassy edge is soleil. In reality, as someone who did quite a bit of prescribed burning for McNoble and Allen Weyerhaeuser stuff, it's hard to get soleil to burn. It takes quite a bit of fuel. Because it's an ericaceous leaf, it doesn't dry out readily and combust. So it's a little harder to get to burn. What is happening along that edge is some of the lodgepole pine are dying. You can see where there's still some green foliage on them, but they're on their way out. Probably one more summer like this, and some of the pine will be dead along there. I know that the 25-foot setback from center line is the road right-of-way. It's kind of Ministry of Transport, which would take it right up into that edge. So is it a town issue? Is it an MOT issue? I'm not sure. But of all the edges, if it's a cigarette butt, is kind of the idea, it's the igniter, that would be the edge that might happen. So I said I would bring it up at the meeting and talk about it a little bit. I wonder, Luke, if, you know, I never know how many volunteers are going to show up, like when I put out a notice for volunteers and stuff. But like in January, we had 22 people out. I'm just wondering, like we don't want to use chainsaws, but, and I don't know about cutting all that swell back over there. It could be done. It's a lot of work. We have a massive pile of debris to take away. Just kind of thinking out loud. Is that something worth doing or that we should think about?
So I think I'd like to just be clear on the intention. Like if you were to do that work, is it for fire mitigation or to increase visibility into the forest, or you know, what would be the goal?
Fire mitigation.
Okay. And it, the most of the material is salal?
A lot of it is salal, and I've looked at it many times. And in fact, that's why I've picked out quite a few rescue trees to plant over the grassy meadow have come from that edge. And I walk over there just to kind of keep an eye on it. But yeah, I would say the predominant species over there is salal.
Well, I guess I'm a little bit confused because you're much more of an expert on burning than I am, and I heard you say that you didn't think the salal would easily ignite. So my level of alarm decreased dramatically, you know, as I deferred to your wisdom on this item. So do I think it's worth doing? I think less than I did 10 minutes ago.
Yeah. Well, salal is hard to burn. Like if you're using a combustible fluid, you've really got to, you've got to put a lot of fuel on, to get her to go. And in reality, I'm not so sure that a cigarette butt, would get anything going. However, we do have residents living along there that are concerned. And you are cutting the grass. So I'm not sure. What if, like it's not much grass. Like when the town does the grass cutting, let's say on Hemsworth in future, could they run the mower along over there? And one thing I spoke to Arnold about too is people need to recognize that when the grass is cut, the town isn't raising up the grass like you would on your lawn. It's less there. So
Tom, I'm just thinking in terms of fire smart programs and whatnot that I was involved in the north. And one of the things that was recommended in the boreal forest communities was to plant aspen. And I'm not suggesting this in this case, in the areas bordering the town to prevent a, if you like, a green fire guard. And I'm wondering if salal here doesn't do, in fact, that exactly the exact same thing, prevent a bit of a fire guard. And so instead of growing grass, why not encourage salal?
Yeah, well, it's kind of a solid wall of salal. I'm just wondering if something could be done to kind of satisfy the residents living along there that we did something.
Would it be worth maybe asking our fire chief to come and take a look at that area and see if they have any recommendations? Or, I don't know, Luke, is that something that...
You read my mind. I think that's an excellent recommendation from the committee, is to invite the fire chief to... You know, to meet with the Brown Property Preservation Society to assess the risk of fire on the St. Andrews side. So, yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Do we need a motion or do we just do it?
I would recommend a motion. Yeah.
I'll also move that I guess in this case, Luke, it would be you. The town invites the fire chief to meet with Brown Preservation Park Society to assess fire risk and management options along St. Andrews.
Second that.
Okay. Super. Okay. Good, Brandy?
Yes. We need to get some points down and all. We were at Baker's.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Well, good. We'll get that done. So what about the bench policy, Luke? I've had two requests recently of people, A, wanting to donate money to the society, which is great. We dropped our charitable status a few years ago because it was costing the society about $250 a year to keep that. And we wrote a bylaw that's there about people can bequeath money to the society through the town, and the town can issue a tax receipt. And then the other question people are having is, can we buy a bench outright, and or what's the new bench policy? Like, what's the fee structure? Because with that issue about all the benches being removed from town and then they were put back, and there was going to be a new bench policy. Where is that at, Luke?
Yeah, so there was a new bench policy adopted, and I did have a quick conversation with Arnold recently. Sounds like you had been in touch with him about the possibility of sponsoring some of those new benches in the forest. So that, I think that is an option. So if he hasn't gotten back to you on that, or if someone hasn't gotten back, my understanding is that they will be getting back to you on that.
Okay. Do we know what the cost is? Like the new fee structure?
Not off the top of my head, I don't, Tom.
Okay.
I think the prices went down.
they certainly did. They went down quite a bit.
Okay. Okay, so is there a document, a bench policy document?
Yes, you could find it on the town website. It was adopted by council in the last year. You may remember the exact date, but I don't,
unfortunately.
Yeah.
I'd say in the last 6 months or so.
6 months, yeah. It's fairly recent.
Okay, so I should look it up on the website and talk to Arnold?
Sure, yes.
Okay. Okay, moving right along. There was a council motion that staff be directed to remove the vegetation pile that's still growing, by the way, at the corner of Hensworth Road in Chester. I spoke to Lynette about that kind of a few weeks ago. There's a new pile that's starting down at the end of Chester at Beach Creek. And it's funny, like, in talking with Daphne, who lives right there, and, you know, she's a landscaper and stuff, we think this is being done after dark, because we and nobody else ever seems to see anybody pulling up in a car or a truck or something, offloading the vegetation. But anyway, it's just one of those ongoing things. It's household yard waste. Like, it's not, you know, garbage necessarily, but it is introduction of a potential feed source, and it's funny, people have taken the signs down. I put signs up in the society, and they're long gone. They didn't last very long.
Still worth doing. It's still worth doing to say to other people, no, this is not a dump. Don't you think? Like, I mean, yes, we get the yard waste cleared away, but having a sign there at least indicates to some of the people that pay attention that it's not the place to dump their stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm happy to put signs up, but it'll be the same people or the same person that takes it down and throws it away.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, and I'm happy to do that. It's the old thing about signs. Do they really have an impact? Like, signs work really well for the people that are going to comply with the sign.
Yeah, the rest don't.
A question for Luke and Anne. Is there a town bylaw that deals with dumping on town property?
There is a bylaw. That's correct.
Right. So I'm wondering if there was an official sign put in place by the town, as opposed to Brown's Property Preservation Society, that made reference to the bylaw. If that would be something useful.
That's a good idea, Cormac.
If that were to happen, there's the real bad location is that corner of Hemsworth and Chester, just kind of going down Chester, kind of alongside the forest. That's a favorite spot. That's the big pile. Right at the very end of Chester, where it hits Beach Creek, and there's a no parking sign there. That'd be a good point. There's already like an aluminum post. There could be an additional sign put no dumping. And the other spot is interesting. It's right next to the garbage can at the gate, going in off Chester to access the fire access road. That's been a favorite spot. There's kind of three locations along Chester.
And yesterday there was a big bag of garbage next to the poo bin along Hemsworth, right by the gate there.
Yeah, the household waste, there's that location. There's the East Crescent Gate itself and the Sunningdale garbage can. Those are the favorite spots. So should we put a motion then to the town to put up no dumping household waste or?
With the bylaw number.
With the bylaw number?
Yeah, make it a bit more official.
Yeah, see, way back when, so the fence, the metal fence was put in along Hemsworth to stop the residents from dumping their garbage in the forest. And it works. People throw bags in there like crazy, the dog bags. If you walk along that edge inside that forest, it's remarkable how many dog bags are in there.
And they, people.
Well, the ultraviolet, is the same reacts to the bag. Like, they're biodegradable, but it needs sunlight to degrade the bag. So it's going to take a very long time for those bags to decompose. But anyway, the fence worked really well for the yard waste, but along Chester, the idea was that it wasn't required because really there was just Dennis and Daphne. You know, Dennis had the house there and there's nobody else down there. That was kind of the idea. And there's no street lights down there. Not that we want any street lights down there, but it's dark at night. So that's a favorite spot. Do we specify three signs, three locations?
I would think so, Tom. Three locations for signs on Chester, on the border of the forest. I don't really have to go any further than that. It sounds to me like it's pretty obvious. It's both ends and in the middle of the gate.
Yeah.
I can second that. I'm good with that.
Okay. Brandy, you got that? Okay. Anybody have anything else they want to add?
I have a couple of weird little things, maybe not very pertinent. I happened to go to the volunteer appreciation reception, which was held recently, and it was wonderful. It was very well attended. When I went, I wasn't really sure why I was there because nobody said. So I didn't know if I was there because of the things I do for Block Watch or the things I do for the Qualicum Woods Residents Association or this. So anyway, I went and it was nice and much all the people, you know, getting praise. And there was a very nice plaque done, which apparently is being posted at the town hall. And it listed different organizations that make our life better. And it also included the Heritage Forest Commission. And it listed our names, which is wonderful, I guess. But there was a name on there. I do not know who that is. This is not someone who's ever been to one of our meetings. And there's this name. So do we have a secret member somehow? Like, what is this? Anybody?
Sounds like a mistake.
It might have been. It might have been. It just was so odd. I thought, who the heck is this? And I know my memory is flawed, but it's not that bad. Yeah. So anyway, that was an item of interest. And the other little note I was putting was that it's going to be a little busy around our area on Saturday because Qualicum Woods is having a district-wide garage sale. So we shall see what the parking is like along Hemsworth, et cetera. And it should be fine. I think it's just, you know, parking in front of houses, which will be, it'll be busy for a short while. So come to our garage sale. Might be good.
Is there any properties in particular that are hosting this garage sale?
Well, we've been doing a bit of advertising, like to the members of Qualicum Woods Residents Association and on Facebook. And I put an ad in the paper, which appeared yesterday. And it's individual, so multiple households, lots of individuals. But there is a house at the corner of Hall and McQuinna Place, Gwen Eel's house, and she has gathered stuff, and they are going to do it as a Ukrainian fund thing. So there is that, and people are also, we're putting a notice on Facebook to encourage people to donate, you know, maybe a little bit from their proceeds just to help out. But other than that, I can't even track it. I mean, I've asked somebody to go around and do a quick house count because I'm tied up at my place. But, you know, would be interesting to see how many people are participating. I put signs on the mailboxes maybe 3 weeks ago, and usually that's a touchy process because you put the signs up on a Friday after the mail person is gone and then get taken down on the Monday. And this time they actually left them up for about a week. So we were very fortunate there. And somebody is putting some more up. I think they realized that not everybody wrote down the date. So they're going to put more up. Maybe they're up today. I don't know. Anyway, it's a little loose, Tom, but just something we're trying to do. Keep our group going and keep people interested. We did have a very well-attended picnic at Christleton Park. Like, really, it was great. We had an ice cream truck. We had a guy dressed as a transformer, and it was like a kid magnet. All these kids came running out of the bushes towards this guy. And it was good. It was using our area in a happy kind of a way. So I guess maybe a garage sale is an extension of that. So, and we do mention the Heritage Forest sometimes at the meetings, just little issues that come up. So it's on our radar. Anyway, might be something to do Saturday morning.
Okay. Well, we look forward to that. Equality work.
Yeah. Chaos. Whoopee.
Okay, one thing I just thought of is, the bald eagles. They were nesting. They were back in the nest this spring. And mom and dad, male, female, were there squawking away. Kept watching mom up on the nest. She was on the nest in June. Could just barely see her wing kind of moving around and stuff. So she's on the nest, and the male is off kind of over near the kiosk kind of thing. They're screeching back and forth. And then they disappeared. They totally disappeared. And so don't know what happened with the chick or chicks. But they must have had something on the go because, again, mom was on the nest. And then at some point in June, they just disappeared. So,
wow.
Anyway, probably not a successful hatch for the bald eagle this year.
Well, there's been an outbreak of avian flu this year, and I worry about that sort of thing happening. So it's not restricted to waterfowl.
Okay.
That's scary.
Yeah. Otherwise, everything's great in the forest. Anybody else have anything to add? Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn. Here we go. Okay, thanks for running it.
Thanks, everybody.
Yeah.